Well, one of the neat things about being a United Methodist pastor is you meet people several times over the course of the journey. Yeah, Bruce is shaking his head. He knows. How many years have you been a pastor now, Bruce? A few.
Oh, 40 or so.
40 or so, yeah. And so you've probably crossed paths with same people several different times. I was started out when I was in seminary on staff at what was then First United Methodist in Galleon. It's now Christ United Methodist Church, having merged with another church in town. And one of the members there was a doctor by the name of Larry Pabst and his wife Judy, and they had these two darling little girls. And some years later, I went back to Mansfield, to that same area, and they showed up for church one Sunday. So it was great to see them again. And at the end of the service, we were kind of catching up, and his wife says to him, Judy says to Larry, tell Doug about that trip you were just on. He goes, oh, yeah. He goes, I went up to the Aleutian Islands just off the coast of Alaska. And was on one of the islands, I think it was for a hunting trip. I can't imagine, but anyways, for a hunting trip. And one morning he said it was really foggy and they couldn't go out hunting that day. So after breakfast at the one restaurant on the island, he went out for a walk. And he says, and I was walking around the island inland. He goes, I would see these piles of king crab traps just stacked up. And he goes, and I thought it was kind of odd because they weren't near the water. And he'd walk a little further, and there'd be another pile of these traps. So when he went back to that same restaurant for dinner that night, he asked some of the locals why there were these piles of these traps inland. And they said, well, those belong to ships that have gone down at sea. As his morning walks continued to the remainder of that trip, he said every time he came to one of those piles of king crab traps, goes in one way, he goes, I realized they served as a memorial to the sailors from those ships. And they were also a haunting reminder of the perils of king crab fishing on the Bering Sea. As I was reading through that Gospel of Matthew text some weeks ago, that story came to mind. These perils that await people at sea. Something those disciples are on the boat that Jesus set them out on that evening were all too familiar with as they headed into that headwind in the boats. They were crashing into the waves and the waves were crashing into the boat. They were very aware of the perils of that situation. I had my charge conference at Kelly's Island a few weeks ago, and got on the ferry there and at Marblehead and was making my way across, and there was a wind out of the north that day. And I'm sitting in my car there near the front of the boat with my windows down, and one wave later, my windows quickly went up. It wasn't a really, didn't seem like that heavy of a wind, but boy, those waters were rough, and they came crashing over the sides of the boat. Four fishermen, at least, on that boat were aware of the perils of what could happen to them on that windy sea. But what's interesting, as much as they were aware of the reality of the situation they were in, with Jesus, they were being introduced to new and different realities, things they had never envisioned before. Blind people regaining their sight, sick who were suddenly healed, the demon-possessed who were freed. And earlier that day, before Jesus had sent them away, they'd watched him take five loaves of bread and two fish and feed a crowd of 5,000 men. And that's not counting the women and the children present, but all those people fed. They kept being introduced to these new realities by Jesus. Matthew writes that early in the morning, as the boat was being battered by the waves, Jesus came strolling across the sea. The disciples clearly were terrified by what they saw. They thought they were seeing a ghost, and they cried out in fear. And that's when Jesus immediately spoke up and said, "Take heart, it's just me. Do not be afraid." The disciples' understanding of reality was being challenged once again. As waves battered the boat, as Jesus stands on the water, Peter begins to contemplate this new reality he's observing in Christ. He's contemplating what God is doing in and through Jesus. And he begins to wonder, if God can do that in Jesus, can God also do that in me? And he says, Lord, if it's really you, command me to come and join you on the water. And Jesus says, come on out. And in that moment, Peter abandons what he has known about the Sea of Galilee, that you can't walk on the water, that in conditions like this, it's dangerous enough to be in a boat, let alone out of the boat in seas like this, and that people die in water such as this. He abandons that because he sees Jesus as one who's presenting this new reality. And Peter, wanting to step into this new reality, gets out of the boat. Can you imagine that? As I was making my way to Kelly's Island and that wave came over the boat, I went, yeah, I'm not getting out of this boat on seas like that. I'm not even a fisherman, and I know the realities of what happens to people in waters like that. Peter gets out of the boat, begins to walk towards Jesus on the water when a wind comes up. A wind comes up. And his old reality returns to him once again, and immediately he begins to sink. I think Peter is caught between conflicting realities, isn't he? He's caught between what he's known for years as a fisherman and all his understanding of the Sea of Galilee and what happens to people on water conditions like that, in the wind and in the waves, and this new reality he's seeing in Jesus, one who walks on the water, one who feeds multitudes of people when there's minimal resources. One reality leads him to get out of the boat. The other one leaves him sinking in the waves. The reality of faith returns to Peter and he cries out, Lord, save me. Oh, he knows who can pull him out of the water. He cries out for Jesus to save him, and Jesus reaches out and pulls him up. And he says to him, you of little faith, why did you doubt? Now, we often hear that phrase, you of little faith, as a chastisement. As Jesus somehow saying, you lacked faith. You didn't have enough faith, Peter. But Sandra Snowd, my counterpart in the Western Reserve District, did a devotion on this past spring at Cabinet and did some research into that the Greek that is often translated as little faith, oligopistos. Oligos means little, pistos means faith. It's used to describe a believer, someone who was steadfast to one's trust. Isn't that a neat phrase? Someone who was steadfast to one's trust. And put together, it means having put little faith into action. We often read this as Peter lacks faith, that he somehow needs to have more faith. But when we look at where this phrase is also used in the Gospel of Matthew, we come to the 17th chapter, where the disciples have been trying to cast this demon out of this child, and they're unable to do it. Jesus comes along, and he does it. And later on, when the disciples are alone with Jesus, they say to him, why couldn't we cast the demons out of that child? And Jesus says, because of your little faith. And he continued, if you would have just the faith the size of a mustard seed, you'd be able to move mountains. Nothing would be impossible for you to do. Even a little faith. Mustard-sized seed type of faith has the ability to be transforming. Even a little faith in a new reality of what can be can bring what seems to be impossible about. So in the story of walking on the water, maybe Jesus isn't chastising Peter. Perhaps he's simply saying to him, you had enough faith. You had enough faith to ask me to invite you to get out of the boat. You had enough faith to begin to walk on the water. You believed enough in what God was doing in me that you believed God could do that same thing in you. Why did you slip back into doubt? Why did you abandon the new reality of what God can do and sink back into a divineless, unempowered understanding of reality? Peter's caught. As I look at the state of the Christian church today, I think we're in that same place as Peter. Caught between realities. Many of our congregations are stuck in the reality of the 1950s. If we put up a new sign, if we update our church brochure, we're going to get people to check us out. If we get rid of all those things that were competing with us in our communities on Sunday mornings, people will come to church again. But we're realizing our old ways no longer work. If you look at the reality the church faces today, it makes it look as though the church is going down at sea. Between 1990 and 2010, 125,000 churches closed in the United States. We know that 80% of our congregations in this country have plateaued or they are declining in their average worship attendance. We know that only 18% of Ohioans will be in church this weekend. We know that the number of people that claim to be part of the group of no religious affiliation whatsoever, they're called the nuns in surveys. We know that number is increasing. This sounds like the reality we face. But we are also aware of the reality of what God is doing through Christ and the reality of what God can do in us. 20% of the churches in this country are growing. We know that 65% of unchurched people would be willing to accept an invitation to come to church with us. And 73% of that group have never been invited. We know that 83% of the people that come to church and stay in a church do so because someone invited them, picked them up, and brought them. The image of church growth in the 50s was to stand at the door of the church and just kind of welcome people as they made their way into our church. But that reality of the church is now gone. I think Jesus is inviting the church to step into a 21st century reality. He's inviting us out into our communities to engage with people there. Jesus invites us to leave our buildings and to step out of the community and bring his transforming grace to the people that we encounter there. He's inviting us to form life-changing relationships with people. He's saying, just have a little faith. A little faith. Enough to abandon the realities we've clung to about the church for years. And hear my invitation to get out of the boat and join me on the waves. Like walking on the water, it's going to seem pretty odd at first to get out of the buildings. We're so used to people coming to us. It's going to be very odd to get out of our building and take ministries to where people are and to connect with people beyond ourselves. But it's happening. You know, we have churches that are no longer doing their Bible studies in churches, but in restaurants in their community. They said we can connect with a lot more people in restaurants that have no church connection than we do with people in our churches. We have congregations that realize that Sunday mornings have been taken and that if they're going to have a children's ministry and they want to have a children's ministry, it's probably going to be more effective to do it at another time during the week. Several congregations in our district are doing after-school programs, knowing they're probably going to reach more children then than they will ever reach on a Sunday morning. And this past summer, one of our congregations in this really small town of about 800 people held their vacation Bible school at the community pool because that's where the kids in that community are gathered. We have congregations that are finding unique ways to share Jesus with others. One of our congregations averages about 45 people on a Sunday morning, but on Tuesday evenings, you'll find about 30 people in the basement of that church involved in a recovery ministry. And what's interesting is they're not waiting for people to just happen to find them. Members of that group are in our county prison, and they're interacting with inmates there who are there because of some addiction issue and inviting them when they come out to join them at their recovery fellowship. Well, that sounds like walking on waves to me. And other congregations that average is less than 80 in worship has teamed up with a program in the community that's offering life skill training and faith development to people that are homeless and trying to get back on their feet again. And they're not waiting for the homeless to come to them. They're reaching out to the homeless at the community shelter. I was meeting with one of our certified lay servants this last summer. And he said he'd been praying about where Jesus had been at work in his community and saying, "Jesus, invite me to where you're already at work or where you want me to be at work so I can join you there." He said one evening a couple years ago he was watching a movie based on a true story about children in this inner city who were just doing terrible at school. And the community realized this and decided they needed to do something about it, so they started an after-school tutoring program. And as the movie went on, after this tutoring program began, it talked about how the grades of the kids and their performance on tests started to improve. But they noticed another thing came out of this program that went far beyond just academic improvement. These kids' tutors were becoming their mentors for life as well. The kids' attitudes about life, the way they were approaching life, was being transformed also. As the movie came to an end and in the days that followed the movie, he began to contemplate, "Jesus, where is it where you want me to be at work?" And he heard Jesus say to him, "You can do that here. You can start an after-school program in your community." So the next Sunday morning, he went to the congregation where 13 people gather each week for worship, and he shared this calling with them. And two women after the church service found him and said, "We'll get out of the boat with you." So I think it's every Wednesday evening, they have this after-school program for about 8 kids in that community. What's interesting is 3 of the kids that come to that Wednesday evening program make their way to that church every Sunday morning. These kids come without any parents or any grandparents. They get ready. They make their way down the couple blocks to the church on their own. They come in there. They're warmly greeted by that small congregation of folks. And as the service begins, those 3 kids sit next to one of their Wednesday evening tutors and with her husband. He and I talked about this a little bit, and as I later reflected on our visit, I thought, at this point in their young lives, we have no idea what this experience of church, what impact that's going to have upon their lives. But I sense they'll always have this spot in their hearts that when they think about church, there will be this warm feeling about it because of that initial experience of church that they had. And there will always be some point of reference regarding the love of Jesus for them that they experienced in that church that they'll always be able to go back to in their lives. That no matter what happens in their lives, they'll have this foundational concept of Jesus' love for them. And I thought, all of this has been made possible because of 3 people who are willing to get out of the boat and walk across the ways to where Jesus was, who had just enough faith to believe in what Jesus could do through them to touch lives and to transform lives. As I've made my way around to our congregations, in my second year of meeting with staff parish relations committees, over and over again, I'm encountering churches that are praying that prayer, "Jesus, show us where you're at work so we can join you there." Our churches on this district have a desire to bring Jesus to people. And I thank you for that. You're not only asking where Jesus is at work, but you're saying, Jesus, we think we have these gifts that you've given to us. Help us to find ways that we can use these gifts to connect with people. And I tell you, I'm excited to hear about the churches that are getting out of the boat and those who want to get out of the boat. Those who want to meet Jesus where he is on the waves. And my prayer for you is as you do that, you'll just have that little faith that's required to keep your focus on him. That little faith that's all that's necessary to do the transforming work of God. Stepping out of ourselves, stepping out of our buildings, and encountering people where they are. So step out boldly, even if it's just a few of you, and make your way across the waves and join Jesus in this incredible business of transforming lives. Let us pray. Jesus, we thank you for the challenge you give us, that in the midst of conflicting realities in which we live, to step out, to get out of the boat and join you on the waves. To have enough faith in not only what God is doing in and through you, but in believing in what you can do in and through us to bring your transforming love to people. Jesus, fill us, use us, for we are yours. Amen.